We're going to read from the introduction. And the introduction begins with somewhat technical description of Bhakti Ras. Since it is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, certainly it has to discuss Bhakti Ras. And I was going to give an example of the Bhakti Ras from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. And we can just read it. I don't want to get too deeply into it because obviously this is just an introduction. The essence of Bhakti Ras is going to be explained. That's why I was asking if this is going to be a continual process. Because if you continue, then eventually you will get into Bhakti Ras.
That's our plan. We've tried it many times before.
So this is the introduction to the Nectar of Devotion, which is otherwise known, which is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the ocean of Bhakti Ras. So, invoking auspiciousness. Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the reservoir of all rasas, or relationships, which are called neutrality, passive adoration, servitorship, friendship, parenthood, conjugal love, comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry, ghastliness, wonder, and devastation. He is the supreme attractive form, and by his universal and transcendental attractive features, he has captivated all the gopis, headed by Taraka, Palika, Syama, Lalita, and ultimately Srimati Radharani. Let his lordship's grace be on us, so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the nectar of devotion, impelled by his divine grace, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by whose inspiration I have been engaged in the matter of compiling the summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the sublime science of devotional service as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared 500 years ago in West Bengal, India, to propagate the movement of Krishna consciousness. So, in the introduction, it is explained, Nanda Maharaj explains in his Waves of Devotion, that it is meant to give an objective of the book. It is meant to offer obeisances, and is meant to also give blessings to the readings. So here it is described that the invoking auspiciousness, the introduction is meant to invoke auspiciousness. And how does it invoke auspiciousness? By establishing the objective right at the very beginning. The objective of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is to know Krishna, who is also known as Akila Rasamrita Murti. Akila Rasamrita Murti means he's the form of all transcendental rasas. That form of all transcendental rasa means that whatever relationship one wishes to have, one can have with Krishna. And therefore it is described in the five types of relationships and seven types of secondary relationships. First, the five primary relationships, which are neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal love. And the secondary are comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry, ghastliness, wonder, and devastation. So, I was going to read, because there's one well-known verse, Prabhupada speaks about it many times, and refers to it in places in his books. It's a verse when Krishna entered into the arena in Mathura, where the wrestlers had gathered, where there was Kuvalyapita, the big elephant, was standing waiting in the front. Krishna killed Kuvalyapita, and then he came into the arena. And there in the arena, there were many different types of people. Some were devotees, some were not devotees, and everyone saw Krishna as he entered and saw him in a different way according to what was in their hearts. When we talk about Akila Rasamrita Murti, we're talking about he is the ocean of all transcendental, of all relationships. Any type of relationship that one has in the heart, one can have with Krishna. Now, of course, these relationships that are described here, some are favorable relationships and some are not so favorable relationships. But nonetheless, these different qualities or characteristics that we just described, the five primary and seven secondary, many of them are described in this one verse, text 17, Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter, I think it's 43. So I'll read the verse and I'll read the commentary. The various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt. The men of Mathura as the best of males. The women as Cupid in person. The cowherd men as their relative. The impious rulers as a chastiser. His parents as their child. The king of the Bhojas as death. The unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form. The yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. Commentary. This verse shows that Krishna is the personified, essential purport of all the Upanishads. Krishna, who is declared in the Shruti to be the great original form of all rasa, Maharasa Swarupa, manifested himself within the wrestling arena to the different types of people present in accordance with their particular mentalities. Rasa, actually it's also explained in the ways of devotion, Bhaktivinoda Samhita Sindhu, commentary of Prabhupada, Nectar of Devotion, that word rasa, generally we take the word rasa to mean relationship. But actually, rasa is not really the rasa means when one takes these five components of rasa and puts them together, one experiences rasa, which is love. Of course, there's also rasa bhas. We may have heard this term before. Rasa bhas. Anybody know what rasa bhas is? Huh?
The shadow of the rasa.
Yes, but it's also a distorted rasa. Distorted.
Yeah,
like overlapping nose. Or yes. It's described that rasa, there are five components of rasa. And Jiva Goswami gives an analogy, just like sweet rice, there's five components of sweet rice. Yeah. Yeah. He says, there's milk, there's rice, there's sugar, there's cardamom, and fire. These are the five components of sweet rice. He says when these five components of sweet rice are all mixed properly, you've got sweet rice. But if, for instance, you mistake the sugar for salt, or you put all the ingredients together but you don't turn on the flame, then you get the five components, but there's a distortion in there. And that distortion means it's not very pleasurable. So he says that this is like rasa, this is what rasa bhas means. Just like, for instance, well, we'll read about one type of rasa bhas in the next paragraph. In front of the wrestlers like Chanura, who had bodies as big as mountains, Krishna was like a thunderbolt. Though Krishna has a tender, cool, and gentle limbs, although Krishna has tender, cool, and gentle limbs, he appeared to the envious wrestlers to be extremely hard like a mountain with harsh pain-inflicting limbs. Though sugar candy is sweet, it tastes bitter to one with jaundice. Though Krishna's form was seen by the wrestlers and other similarly inclined spectators, they did not taste the real form, Rasa Swarup, of the Lord, but rather experienced Rasa Bas in their hearts. Okay. So, anyways, as we were saying before, that Rasa is a component, is a combination of different components of Rasa. And these different components will be explained in the Nectar Devotion. They're called Vibhava, Anubhava, Satvika Bhava, Vyavachari Bhava, and Stayi Bhava. They're different components that which heightens one's love for Krishna. Nectar of Devotion simply means, as we probably read about in the preface last week. Did you read the preface last week? That what is the object of all love? Krishna. Right. If anyone's looking for a perfect object to love, that perfect object to love is Krishna. Why is that perfect object to love Krishna? Because Krishna can reciprocate perfectly. Krishna says, Yaya tamam prapajante tam sitagra vajanyam. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna can reciprocate according to however one wants to approach the Lord. If one has love, that is the primary component, love. Love, Rupa Goswami will describe what love is in this introduction of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He'll describe what are the characteristics of love. Anya Vilasata Sunyam Jnana Kamanya Navatam Anukhilyena Krishnano Shinam Bhaktir Uttama. That devotional service which is rendered free from any material motivation with the desire to exclusively please the object of one's service. These are described as characteristics of love. So, Krishna is the perfect object of love. And if one has love, then these different components, Krishna, or should we say, Krishna is the perfect object for that love. Because Krishna can reciprocate that love fully, completely, and satisfy whatever exists within the heart of the worshipper. Fully satisfied. Therefore, the primary relationships are described as friendship, if you want to be Krishna's friend, or Krishna's God. We may say, if Krishna's God, he's a Aham Bija Prata Pita, he's the seed-giving father of all living beings. How could somebody be Krishna's father? How could somebody be Krishna's mother? It's not possible. Krishna is the source, the origin of everything. It's not possible that somebody could be his mother. But Krishna makes the impossible possible by manifesting love in such a way that he becomes subservient to the desire of that devotee who wishes to be Krishna's mother or have maternal affection. And becomes so subservient that the devotee does not know that Krishna is God. And Krishna becomes so subservient to the love of that devotee that he even forgets that he's God in that relationship with his mother. He forgets that he's God in order to relish the mood of being the son. The same way Krishna has these other types of relationships which are described here. So to get into all the components of Rasa, I'm not going to get into in detail of what is Vibhav, Anubhav, Satvikabhav, Yavacharya. This will come up in later when you get into the more later parts of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But this is essentially, what I'm talking about is essentially how this introduction is beginning. It's beginning by establishing right from the very beginning what is the object of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. If we don't understand what the object is, just like Prabhupada, he oftentimes gave the example, he said that any system of religion that teaches its followers to love God is a bona fide system of religion. And Srila Prabhupada, right from the very outset, in establishing his Krishna consciousness movement, he made it perfectly clear, right from the very outset, what is the objective. He didn't hide Krishna. He didn't introduce Krishna in a covered way. He didn't say that, you know, the goal of chanting Hare Krishna is, you know, to control your mind. The goal of chanting Hare Krishna is to, to remove all disturbing elements in your life. You know, Prabhupada established right from the very outset, what is the objective of coming to Krishna, of coming to America and introducing the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, was to teach everyone who is God and how to love Him. Nothing. So that is the objective that Rupa Goswami is establishing right from the very beginning of his introduction. What are we studying in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? What do we want to get out of this study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? We want to know who is the object of love. Who is the most complete object of love? And who can satisfy whatever loving propensities, whatever desires that may be in our heart to want to offer that love in the mood of service? Who can perfectly reciprocate that better than Krishna? Therefore, he quotes some verse. I don't know the verse. The verse is not, Prabhupada doesn't quote the verse. He just gives a summary of the verse. But basically the verse is that establishing Krishna was, as part of the verse is Akila Rasa Mita Murti, which means the ocean of all transcendental rasas. So I'm going to read a little more of this verse when Krishna entered into the Vasali Govina. We read about how everyone saw Krishna according to their particular mentality. The wrestlers, they saw him as a thunderbolt. Why? Because that's just what Krishna was for Chanura and Mushtika. He was, although those who see Krishna, see his gentle limbs and his tender, cool and gentle limbs, they are attracted by that, and it invokes and stimulates in them love. In the wrestlers, it stimulates fear. Because he looks like a thunderbolt to them. Because that's exactly what's going to happen to them. Anyway, so the men of Mathura, who were not envious from their very birth, and endowed with a generalized mood of pure love, Krishna appeared as the best of men, possessing the most excellent qualities, and performing the most amazing and extraordinary pastimes. Because the minds of these men were situated in pure goodness, he appreciated Krishna's true identity as the best of males, and thus they relished the mellow of astonishment, vismaya rasa. The young women of Mathura, who were without any trace of material lust and full of prema, appreciated Krishna's true identity as the original Cupid. Therefore, within their hearts, Krishna manifested the mood of conjugal affection by the use of the word murtiman, incarnation or embodiment, as a modifying adjective for smara, Cupid. It indicates that all other realizations are limbs or expansions of this particular sarup. Krishna's form is the transcendental Cupid or Kamadev. The cowherd boys appreciated Krishna's true identity, sarupa, as their intimate friend. Thus among them he manifested the moods of friendship, sakyaras, and the mellow of humor, hasyaras. Right? Just like Krishna when he plays with his friends, they oftentimes with Madhumangal. Madhumangal is his joking friends. He always cracks jokes, makes Krishna laugh, makes all the cowherd boys laugh. Right? So they have friendship and hasyaras in comedy, or humor. The impious kings who were burning the earth and offending the Lord's devotees saw Krishna as their destroyer. But since being the destroyer is not the sarup of Krishna, who is the well-wisher of all and the reservoir of unlimited pleasure, persons like the wrestlers cannot appreciate Krishna's true identity. Among them, Krishna manifested rasa bhas in the mood of anger, raudra rasa. For his parents, Nanda and Vasudev, or else Vasudev and Devaki, Krishna appeared as a baby, indicating that they appreciated his sarup. Although Krishna was older here, for Vasudev and Devaki, Krishna was simply, they saw him as their child. That's all. indicating they appreciated his Shuruk, since being the son of Nanda and Vasudeva are both his true identity. Thus they experienced the mood of parental love, Vatsalya Ras, and also the mood of compassion, Karuna Ras. Why did they experience compassion? Because they saw that there were persons who were present who wanted to hurt Krishna. And what do they think? Because their parents, they're thinking that it's their duty to protect their son. Just like, you know, Mother Jasoda, also in Vrindavan, when she sees Krishna going out every day into the forest, and sometimes she hears all these stories about Krishna meeting demons, she thinks, I have to do something to protect my son. So every morning when Krishna takes his bath, she chants the different names of Vishnu on all different sides in order to protect him. So that he won't be, you know, in case one of the demons comes and attacks her son, then at least my son will be protected from these demons. So that is how she's thinking. She doesn't think that Krishna is God. So in the same way, Vasudeva and Devaki, who were present there at the arena, the wrestling arena, when they saw Krishna, they saw Krishna as their son, and they also were experiencing the mood of Karuna Ras, which is compassion. Which is that, because they were afraid that there were some people there who really wanted to hurt their son, and they were thinking that, you know, something could happen, something terrible could happen to their son. Is this too...
Just, who was this last, which parents were they?
Vasudeva and Devaki.
Why would they think that? They know that he's... I mean, I could see...
They still have paternal affection. They still have that affection towards Krishna. But sometimes it's manifest in reverence, and sometimes it's not. In Vrindavan, it's mostly Madhurya, and sometimes Aishwarya is manifest. And outside of Vrindavan, it's mostly Aishwarya, and sometimes Madhurya is manifest, the sweetness. So sometimes they also think this way.
I mean, from, like in the Krishna book, it seems they know that he's God. They still worry about him, though,
actually. Yeah, they still worry about him. Because
yeah.
They think he's still their son. Vasudev was very worried. That's why he brought Krishna to Vrindavan. He was fearful for his son. Even though Krishna first appeared before them in his four-arm form, and it's explained that Krishna first appeared for him in his four-arm form, just so that Vasudeva would know that the benediction that he wanted to get was received. And then Krishna manifested himself in his two-arm form. And Vasudeva carried him. So that was Vasudeva and Devaki. Kamsa, the king of the Bhojas, saw Krishna as death. Krishna, who is a stream of sweet, intoxicating nectar, does not have a swarup of death. Thus Kamsa did not really taste Krishna, but simply got a dim reflection of transcendental taste and a vas in the mood of fright or bhayanaka rasa.
Bhayanaka?
Bhaya means fear. It's one of the types of secondary rasas. So he experienced anger. He experienced fear. But it was, he didn't really experience the taste of rasa with Krishna. Because he experienced Krishna's death. And Krishna, although Krishna says, I am death in Bhagavad Gita, it's not one of his rasas. To Kamsa's ignorant priests and other offenders, Krishna appeared as an ordinary mundane person. Such bewildered persons said, just see, what sort of supreme lord is this that steals others' wives and slaughters cows and other innocent creatures? Indeed, even now his limbs are contaminated with the bones and blood of some living being, which is wicked even for ordinary men. Thus Krishna is most repulsive to look at. Since such extremely sinful blasphemers who are unintelligent and more fallen than demons like Kamsa had no attraction for Krishna. Their mood was a rasa bas of ghastliness.
More fallen than demons that come.
Yeah.
You're not saying that.
No. That's more fallen than
demons. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur just said.
Right. No, yeah. I was just saying that.
They didn't say that. For the yogis, such as Sanaka, Krishna was the supreme truth in person, the Param Brahma, which means that they did not appreciate Krishna's true identity. And then Krishna manifested the mellow of neutrality, Santaras. The members of the Vishnu dynasty saw Krishna as their most worshipable supreme lord. They tasted his fruit in the mood of servitorship, or servitude, Dasyaras. Among the 10 types of people described in the arena, 4 being inimical to Krishna were unable to appreciate the transcendental moods of relationship with Krishna, and thus could not taste the real rasa of Krishna, who is the source of all rasa. The other 6 classes of persons relished 8 rasas. The Upanishads say, Raso vai sa rasa hyayam labhvanandi bhavati. The Supreme Lord is the very form of rasa. Having tasted that rasa, our most astonishing bliss, the living entity becomes completely blissful. It is confirmed here in the 10th canto's description of Kamsa's wrestling match that Krishna is that rasa, raso vaisa. The above statement on rasa from the Upanishads means that though a person may be blissful, if he attains Krishna, tam ladva, who is rasa personified, he then becomes completely full of bliss, ananda bhavati. So anyways, that's the commentary.
If he's blissful and then sees Krishna, he can become full of bliss?
The above statement on rasa from the Upanishad means that though a person may be blissful, if he attains Krishna, who is rasa personified, then he becomes completely full of bliss.
Okay, blissful, so you're not completely full, you just got some other stuff there too.
I guess it's, maybe it's the utilization of the words in the translation, but it does. It does simply imply that the state of blissfulness is not full of bliss. It's a state of experiencing some happiness, which is not to its heightened state. Heightened state, which is when all the components of rasa are all at once, right? Like it's described that there, rasa means when there is the object of stimulus of love, when there is anubhava, when you see something that stimulates that love, and then there is some subsequent action. And I think Dhanada Maharaj gives the example in the ways of devotion that just like a mother always has her love for the child in her heart. When the mother sees the child, sees the face of the child, it's always there. But when it sees the face, then there is some anubhava, there's some subsequent action. The mother may reach over and embrace the child. Right? So that's an anubhava, the embrace, which heightens the same love that's already there in the heart. And then there's the sattvika bhavas, which are involuntary actions, such as the hair standing on head, or tears coming from the eyes, eruptions of the body, hyperlations on the body. These are all sattvika bhavas. They're involuntary experiences that take place in ecstasy in the body. Then there's vyabhachari bhavas, which are transitory. They come and they go, and it's like the 33 different types of vyabhachari, transitory bhavas one has in the Lord. And all these serve to stimulate, and sthayi bhava. Sthayi bhava means one's relationship with Krishna. But sthayi bhava means either friend, or parent, or conjugal lover. And all these bhavas, when they all come together, and they stimulate it in the proper way, they increase, they heighten rasa, or love for Krishna. So this is what I believe is being referred to here, that when one may be blissful, but when he attains Krishna, who is rasa personified, then he becomes completely full of bliss. that all these components are all manifested simultaneously. That's how I take it.
Fine.
I've read three paragraphs, two paragraphs. Yeah. Well, you're going to see it. Anyways. I thought that verse was very relevant.
Yes, it is.
Especially since it was the invocation, you know, this is what Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is.
No, I think it's really nice.
So Srila Rupa Goswami begins his great book by offering his respect. How late do you go for?
I don't know. What time is it?
7:10.
Okay. What time do we usually go? 6 to 7. Ultimately, that's 7:30.
I'll read a few more paragraphs.
Okay.
Srila Rupa Goswami begins his great book by offering his respectful obeisances unto Sri Sanatana Goswami, who is his elder brother and spiritual master. And he prays that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu may be very pleasing to him. He further prays that by residing in that ocean of nectar, Sri Sanatana Goswami may always feel transcendental pleasure in the service of Radha and Krishna. Let us offer our respectful obeisances to all the great devotees and acharyas, who are compared to sharks in the great ocean of nectar, and who do not care for the various rivers of liberation. Impersonalists are very fond of merging into the Supreme, like rivers that come down and merge into the ocean. The ocean can be compared to liberation, and the rivers to all the different paths of liberation. The impersonalists are dwelling in the river water, which eventually comes to mix with the ocean. They have no information, however, that within the ocean, as within the river, there are innumerable aquatic living entities. The sharks who dwell in the ocean do not care for the rivers, which are gliding down into it. The devotees eternally live in the ocean of devotional service and do not care for the rivers. In other words, those who are pure devotees always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord and have no business with the other processes, which are compared to the rivers that only gradually come to the ocean. Essentially, in that paragraph, Prabhupada is simply taking Rupa Goswami's words and explaining how devotees are not interested in personal liberation. I think it says like that the sharks reside in the ocean. They avoid the rivers, and they go down deep into the ocean, so they'll not be captured by the fisherman's net. So I think these are different analogies that are being given to help us understand that we're not interested in merging. The devotee is always interested simply in engaging in service to the Supreme Lord, and he wishes simply to continue. This concludes right here, that pure devotees always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord and have no business with the other processes, which are compared to the rivers that only gradually come to the ocean. Srila Rupa Goswami prays to his spiritual master, Srila Sanatana Goswami, for the protection of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the pure nectar of devotional service. From the argumentative logicians who unnecessarily meddle in the science of service to the Lord, he compares their arguments and logic to volcanic eruptions in the midst of the ocean. In the midst of the ocean, volcanic eruptions can do very little harm. And similarly, those who are against devotional service to the Lord and put forward many philosophical theses about the ultimate transcendental realization cannot disturb this great ocean of devotional service. The author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits is just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this work. That should be the attitude of all preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think of ourselves as great preachers, but should always consider that we are simply instrumental to the previous acharyas, and simply by following in their footsteps, we may be able to do something for the benefit of suffering humanity. Prabhupada is simply taking, again, the words of Rupa Goswami, and including them in his introduction. And in this particular paragraph, Prabhupada is establishing a very important point for anyone who is a preacher, that is, it's always the attitude of all preachers of Krishna consciousness that he should always think himself to be unfit for preaching, that he's simply instruments to the previous acharyas. And by following in their footsteps, they will do something for the benefit of suffering humanity. In other words, the preacher always thinks that because I've received the superior order, on the strength of the superior order, anything that may manifest, which is in the way of success, is not really due to my own endeavors alone, but it is simply due to the desire, as Prabhupada would oftentimes state. He would oftentimes explain that in his preaching of Krishna consciousness, that so many young men and women were coming to assist them because it was the desire of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He never claimed any credit for himself, but always would give credit to the previous acharyas, to his spiritual master. And he would say that if there's any success at all, it's simply because I heard nicely from my spiritual master. So he perfectly demonstrated by his own example how he never thought himself to be the criteria, sole criteria of his success in preaching Krishna consciousness, but he was always conscious of his subordinate position to the superior order. And he says that should be the position of anybody who is executing devotional service, that in order to be successful in the execution of one's devotional service, one has to be conscious of the fact that they are subordinate to the superior order. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in all activities, depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be conscious, you should be fully conscious of me. If you're conscious of me, you'll cross over all the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. But if you do not work in that consciousness and act with false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So Krishna is telling Arjuna the same principle, that if you fight and you're always conscious of me, then whatever obstacle comes before your path can be overcome because you're always thinking yourself to be subordinate to my will. He says, but if you're not conscious of me and you act with false ego, by not hearing my instructions and you're acting independently, thinking yourself to be the doer, prakrite kriyamani igunai kumani savasha, ahankara vibhudatna kartaham iti manyate, the bewildered soul under the influence of the three modes of material nature, he thinks himself to be the doer of activities. So such persons who are under the influence of the three modes of material nature, they think themselves to be the doer, they think they are the preachers, or they are the performer of Herculean tasks, or they are the creators, they are the builders, they are the whatever it may be they're doing. So a devotee always thinks himself to be a person who's under the superior order, and by the desire of the superior Vaishnava, that I can simply become an instrument for fulfilling that desire. And if there's any credit on my part at all, the credit is that I simply serve the superior order. So Rupa Goswami, he expresses that, and Srila Prabhupada expresses the same mood in his presentation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right in the very, very beginning, he offers his obeisances to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, by whose inspiration I have been engaged in the matter of compiling this summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that is how that is the true consciousness of a Vaishnava, that he understands that his position is always subordinate and he always remains conscious of that subordinate position. And if he remains conscious of that subordinate position by dint of his firm faith in the superior order, then in due course of time all obstacles will be removed from his path. And just as in the previous verses described that in the midst of the ocean, even volcanic eruptions cannot cause any harm whatsoever.